people have powerful feelings about the traffic in Los Angeles, it says something that local officials warned motorists about a temporary road work closure on the 405 last year by calling it Carmageddon. Angelenos took the hint, and this weekend they're expected to steer clear of the latest 405 closure, named, of course, Carmageddon 2. That's how it is in L.A., a snarl of overstuffed freeways and commuters who keep their cool, except when they don't. KPCC's Stephen Cuevas has this profile of a punk rocker whose music expresses the insanity of L.A. traffic while extolling the virtues of public transit.
Couple of things you need to know about Eddie Solis. He lives in L.A., loves the band Kiss, and does not own a car.
Being someone who's from L.A., born and raised, and, you know, having a few cars in my past, I saw the city much differently through a different perspective through the eyes of a bus rider.
Want to stall way the back?
Sure. Line 18, Wilshire Western Station.
Just steps from the front door of his home, across the street from a tortilla factory in L.A.'s Boyle Heights neighborhood, Solis catches a bus that connects him with the city's subway and the commuter train he catches to his day job at an indie record label in Hollywood.
It just opened me up to, like, little neighborhoods, galleries, clubs, bars, just everything. Just seeing what's out there, little pockets of the city.
Solis's journeys aboard L.A. buses and subway cars informs a lot of the material on The New Los Angeles Part 1, Through the Eyes of a Bus Rider, the latest release by the singer-guitarist band It's Casual. In Solis's vision of a new Los Angeles, people abandon their cars, climb aboard public transit, and rediscover their communities. One song extols the virtues of the L.A. County Metropolitan Transit Agency's Easy Pass and the urban underbelly it introduces to the rider.
And that's a nod and homage to, you know, the people who know what you can even go cheaper and really beat the system and really steer away from spending money on gas and oil profits and all that. Is all it takes for me to witness racial tension, for me to witness illegal aliens. It's not to paint a negative picture, it's just my perspective of what is seen.
Off the bus and back on the street, we make our way past a jazz saxophonist playing for pocket change and down a long escalator to catch a train.
So, where are we now?
We're at the Red Line station, the Pershing Square station in downtown L.A.
And what's our destination?
We're going to go downstairs another tier, and about 5 minutes, we're going to get on the Red Line going northbound.
Okay, yeah. Let's go.
The Metro Red Line snakes from North Hollywood to downtown Los Angeles. It's the train that inspired It's Casual's signature tune and spawned a viral internet video. It was partly filmed late at night on a moving train as it hurtles from station to station. Solis thrashes away on his guitar and barks the lyrics, which celebrate the Red Line and call out the congested freeways that coil around Los Angeles.
Este es un tren de Metro Red Line a North Hollywood.
The thread that comes out of the record that ties everyone together is just like, be alive, don't be a victim of having a car.
MTA spokesman said he couldn't comment on Eddie Solis's furious pro-Metro message, but the Red Line video was a hit at the offices of Move LA.
Eddie's done a good job. Thank you, Eddie.
It's the public transportation advocacy group headed by former Santa Monica Mayor Denny Zane. He liked the juxtaposition of Solis blissfully riding L.A. public transit in one scene with scenes of the band raging against those notorious freeway jams.
Eddie is all frantic when he talks about highways. And so mellow when he's like grooving on a skateboard and on the bus and on the Red Line, there's a metaphor for the transformation, you know, from the, oh my God, I just got to get out of the traffic to, hey, this is cool. I can mellow out.
Or you can blast the tune like Too Many People as you claw your way across Los Angeles by car, bus, or skateboard. Too Many People could also be a motto for It's Casual. Over the years, the band whittled itself down to a power duo of Solis and a rotating cast of drummers. So you may think the burly, bearded punk rocker just can't get along with freeways, with people, or his native L.A. Not true.
I love it. I love everything about it. I've traveled throughout the U.S. many times, and I could never look forward enough to coming back. The weather, the different cultures, the landscape. I was just like, you know what? Now I know why everyone moves to L.A.
Solis will bring the love and the volume during a Red Line mini tour next month. It's Casual will play a different venue within walking distance of several Red Line metro stops from Union Station to West Hollywood. For the California Report, I'm Stephen Cuevas.
That's the California Report, a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. Our director this week is Nina Thorson. Seal Muller is our technical producer. We had additional engineering from Danny Bringer and Howard Gelman. Thanks to Hank Hadley at KCBX. Our online team includes Lisa Pickoff-White, David Marks, and Don Clyde. Our interns are Catherine Borgeson and Rachel Johnson. Tyke Hendricks is our elections editor with production help from Tina Lauerberg. We had editing support from Paul Rogers. Victoria Malione is our associate senior producer. Ingrid Becker is our senior producer. The news director is Bruce Kuhn. I'm Rachel Miro. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995. And the California Endowment. Health happens in schools at calendow.org. And Chevron, investing in renewables, strengthening communities, and creating jobs. More information at chevron.com.
The 210, the 605, the freeways are not so nice. The I-5, the 210, the freeways are not so nice. The 101, the 405, the freeways are not so nice. The I-5, the I-10, the freeways are not so nice. The 210, the 605, the freeways are not so nice. I-5, the I-10. The I-5, the I-10, the freeways are not so nice. The 101, the 405, the freeways are not so nice. The 605, the 101, the 101, the 101, the I-10, the 210, the 605, the 101, the 405, the I-10, the freeways are not so nice. The red light.
Welcome to Los Angeles Nista. I'm your host, producer Edward Solis. My in-studio guest tonight, Brendan Krigler. What's up, Brendan?
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, man. Yeah, I'm really stoked to have an actual friend on the show. You're an actual personal friend of mine.
Absolutely.
And well, we'll get into that later, how we met and all that. But you are a man of many traits. We're going to talk about in this episode, surfing the coast of Los Angeles County and Orange County, and you know, the movie business, the music business, and all that good stuff. I think you're a well-rounded individual that knows all different cultures of Los Angeles, even like the Latino culture, and you're not even Latino.
No. Some experiences.
Yeah. And, have you had a chance to listen to any of the episodes so far?
No, honestly, I haven't.
Interesting. We've had, I think when you have an afternoon that's free, you know, you'll be able to enjoy some of the episodes. We've had like Wee Man, Off.
I know the dudes. And
James Rhoda.
I'm sure you got.
You know, Jim Rhoda from Fireball did the Sound City movie with Dave Grohl. He produced that, and that's gone on to do very well. He came in, and there's a new Dick House Productions show called Loiter Squad.
Nice.
And last week we had actually our biggest live listenership episode of all time with this guy named Dark Shark from Loiter Squad. It's on Adult Swim every week, and it's been doing good. So he came in with Rick. And, yeah, it was great. But, as far as, you know, the 420 goes, happy 420.
Yeah, absolutely. Why not?
Are you 420'd out right now?
No comment.
Yeah, right. So, for me, do you think that, I mean, I'm not really, immersed in that culture personally, but, do you think as far as laws go, it's time to fully legalize it?
Yeah, no doubt. I'm over it. I'm over the prejudice and I'm over the difference. And I think it's interesting that a lot of news has come out just recently. I mean, I never realized that beer hops and bud were basically the same plant, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they work the same way. And so I'm just kind of over the prejudice and the drama and the controversies. It's no worse, no different than what's already being presented in the marketplace.
Sure.
So that's all I would like to say for 420. And I like the music related with 420. And that's kind of what's happening as far as rock and roll goes. Always has been. So it's part
of
the culture.
I mean, since the late 60s and the Woodstocks and all that.
California. It's been here for a while now.
I mean, you know, it's funny when you think about it. I mean, you know, today's a big, you know, for people that are listening that don't know, the whole 420 thing, you know, equals the marijuana, legalize it.
But it comes from the Grateful Dead. I mean, that's where California culture. I mean,
totally.
Straight up.
That's Bay Area, right?
Yeah.
But then also, I mean, I think something that gets overlooked too is like Cheech and Chong.
Everyone's broken the barriers at different times.
Right. But I think like that comedy duo actually like was the overflowed into every different culture out there, that, you know, in the mainstream, and people connected with that. And it's gone on to be like a huge phenomenon. And especially now, you know,
I also think there's a teenage rebellion still going on there. You know, if they take the opportunity to fly to Colorado to have a party, then it's like their spring break or whatever.
Question for you. What do you think? I mean, you know, when you talk about marijuana and all that, it just seems like when people did it in the late 60s and 70s, the translation was different. Like the way they made music compared to now, everything just seems so rigid now. Like, what do you think? Because it was so new. And
I think it's becoming really prominent. I mean, it's as a culture, whether it's hip hop or DJ or, you know, electronic stuff and rock and roll. I mean, people were embarrassed by the term stoner rock, but that's like an actual genre.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's actually a website called stonerrock.com.
Yeah, the most successful for that, you know, cornered that market, I would say. But in general, that's always been part of a subculture or whatever. And I don't know. I don't think there is such a difference from then or now. I think it's more prevalent now and it's on the border of being accepted. So,
right. But as far as the actual art that's being made with the catalyst being marijuana.
I think you're talking about quality or something.
Yeah. I mean, do you think that this day and age, it's like the output from marijuana intake is the same as it was in the 60s and 70s? You think more people are doing it? And I'm talking from an artistic standpoint, because I'm not into that. I don't know the culture. I don't really. So I'm just really.
Well, I see
interested in your opinion.
I see it as an alternative lifestyle in general.
Mm-hmm. And a subculture.
Subculture, as far as the art culture, and if you're a graffiti artist, or if you're an artist, or you're a professional in one craft or the other. Plenty of engineers of all kinds, architects, you know. People make choices. People can be sober. That's cool. I think most people are sober. But
with some people,
to each their own.
Smoking marijuana is sober.
I'm not taking the right to judge other people.
Sure, sure.
Basically.
One topic I want to touch on with you that we've had many conversations about is how healthy, thick and rich, and distinct California culture is. And I'm talking about music, surfing, skateboarding, coastal life, you know, even like the East LA, you know, scene and everything that SoCal has to offer. You've traveled a lot. You've done, you know, you spent some time in Europe. And we've always had these conversations how, you know, like in Germany, like they love the whole, you know, suicidal tendencies, you know, Venice style of living, you know, music, skateboarding, graffiti.
It's California.
I mean, do you think once you've been around,
but it's the been world, interpreted
it dominates everyone's interpretation of like doing something like they want to do it like us?
No, I think what I kind of wrote in some notes just in my thinking about different subjects that we might talk about, that we're like New York, but we also have a coast, a real coast. And it's kind of like we've always had the art and the, you know, the people going out west, everyone going out on adventures, and the people that, you know, were always breaking into a frontier, you know, economically or whatever, creatively, you know, like living in Santa Barbara, I used to take care of this house, and the guy that built this insane house invented refrigerator cars for importing beef to California from Chicago, and you became minted, you know. So anybody,
they have a company name.
Oh, I can't remember, but this was like 1900, the year, and right. So you know, he was like on a huge scale. He figured out how to get fresh meat out to California. So that was kind of its own little revolution. It took a lot of work to get out here. So those are tend to be ambitious people. And then, you know, California is a competing ground, whether you're a band or an artist or
an architect.
For sure. Anything. I mean, I consider that to be more international. But certainly in entertainment, you have to compete here. You're going to stop through. You're going to have to, you know, meet and greet with the execs. You're going to have to. It's centered here. And it might be spreading out in, you know, project, you know, intervals or whatever. But I still think that the business has been here for a long time, the culture, the broadcast. And so it's kind of a competing ground. It's kind of like an ultimate mix, no matter where in your world. If you make a huge movie in India, you have to go to Hollywood to sell it. So
it all comes back here.
Yeah. And the kids grow up in that culture. They're ready to compete. They're cutting edge. You know, someone from a small town in cornfield doesn't know what's going on.
The ethos behind it and the connections, like, was what you're saying, yeah.
And just being fast forward. I have
progressive?
Friend.
You mean progressive?
Yeah, absolutely. And fast. And a friend of mine has kids, and he's always telling me about them, and he's already spicolied out at, like, 3 years old, you know? He's, like, he's already skateboarding and surfing.
Checking vans and, like...
Dude, the guy's got it made, gets everything for free, sponsored, you know, and in general... This kid is going to be a little bit ahead of the curve, you You know what I'm saying?
Right. So he passes it on. He has a son, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
And like he's all spagolied out, like just doing his thing.
Well, you know, it's
when we say spagolied out, like we don't mean smoking weed on prom night.
Oh,
we mean
no.
Like surfing, skateboarding, living. Yeah.
Natural.
And actually doing it though.
Long haired.
Slip ons, no socks.
Yeah.
But actually out there with a board and like going to the beach.
Thanks for
and
clarifying.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
And like listening.
I thought that was inherent. Yeah. But yeah.
But some people may not, you know, get what we are.
I forget about the audience.
Like when we say, you know, you got to remember we're heard all over the world.
I'm not here to judge. And I think that people should assume the best and not the worst.
Right. So no. You know, with all these listeners around the world, we got to remember that. A lot of people don't translate like we do. You know what I mean? Like when we
well, that's
we say
kind things, of the point, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, gray area. No, but you know what? I mean, that itself is really it's like a timeless. When we say spagolied out, the point I'm trying to make is some people may think like, oh, what do you mean? Like some stoner? No, it's like immersed in California culture.
Yeah,
like you're listening to the cool music. You're out there with a board. You're going to the beach
you're
to surf.
Sporty. Yeah. And involved.
Exactly. Enthusiastic. You're committed to the lifestyle.
I mean, I see a lot of preppy dudes out there in Newport Beach, let me tell you, with their BMWs and stuff. And I wouldn't say they're spicolied out, but they've probably got their own little California culture. But I think it's a little bit of a dying breed. And in general, you know who those people are. And I might get tagged for that myself, but. Proudly so.
You know, I think one topic I want to touch on is the local music scene in Los Angeles and Orange County. I've met you in, I think it's already been 5 years ago.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, 2008. For a part-time job, you know, I still do work at Southern Lord. And as a label manager there, you know, it's an office job at a record label. And I've always, always had my hand in something else. I, at one point from 2007 to like 2011, the end of 2011, I was putting shows on as a show promoter at the Relax Bar. And I would do 4 shows a week, Thursday through Sunday.
That was intense.
And I think the other day I actually counted all my shows I put on as a promoter and it was almost 300. And, could have been 300 and change.
Yeah.
And because, you know, you're doing like, what, 30 or 40, 50 a year. I was more because I was doing them almost every weekend.
No, that's a huge buildup.
Yeah.
There's these guys sweating it out at different venues around town.
Right.
And
so I met,
it's not well paid. It's hard work.
Right.
That's what I was going
to say. Right. So I met you through coming through the door and seeing you at the shows and then seeing you at other shows around town. And I was very...
I think it kind of started on MySpace. I remember throwing you some random messages with the Fu Manchu connection.
Yeah, exactly. But I know like you would come through the door and I would...
kind of funny.
I would see you like...
MySpace.
Yeah, MySpace days. When I remember one show at the Relax Bar was It's Casual, Tony Alva's band, GFP, and Meat Men. And I remember, you know, you were here and then some Viper Room shows we played... And, you know, we sort of struck up a friendship, and I was always amazed at your perspective on any show that was taking place. You had a lot of, you were just like a librarian. You were like standing there watching everyone come through and check in and really, really like paid attention to the demographic and, you know, the band's draw and like how the band sounds. And you were very, you had like this, you know, like you were able to capture certain elements and explain to me like where you thought some of the roots of this band came from. And we'd have these intellectual conversations about music, like, you know, just you interpreting what you thought this band was all about. And we would have these great conversations about them. And I haven't had, you know, any connection with someone like that thoroughly when it comes to like seeing music and talking about it.
No, yeah.
So it was really cool. And then I found out, you know, that you surfed and you worked in the movie business as well. And we'll get into that later, but I want to talk about the current state of local music. It seems to me that locally the music scene in Los Angeles is pretty high and dry.
Yeah. I feel kind of out of it at the moment. Like I've been keeping an eye on it. And but not as involved. And in general,
I'm talking at a real local level.
No, and I think it's a pretty desperate scene. There's just so many bands.
So many bands.
Saturated.
Oversaturated by hundreds. And I think there's a lot of unfair business practices that the clubs are providing. Like, there's not really, unless you're an established act, you'll be treated correctly because your booking agent will book you. But if you're not really, you know, represented and have a draw, it's really, you know, it's easy to walk into a shitstorm. You know what I mean? I mean,
yeah.
Now, you know, maybe you'll bring people and you don't negotiate. And at the end of the night, you get like $100, but like 100 people paid $5 to get in, and there's $500 gross dollars at the door, and you're getting paid $100.
Oh yeah,
you know,
you got it's slightly better than pay to play, even though that still
exists. That's another whole situation.
But in general, I would say that you have to invest to survive. You know, and everything is down to a level in all the industries because of computers. There's a base price for a performance or a product. Basically, there are kids doing it in their garage. So how can a professional compete with that? And, you know, if a band will play for free versus a band that needs the money. And, you know, I don't know what to say, but there's different strokes for different folks. I mean, there's the whole spectrum of rich kids and people from local neighborhoods and... I don't know what it takes. It's, you know, who does your dad know or whatever, you know, that it's all Malibu or whatever. It's into play.
Sure. Sure. I mean, but I think where I was getting at was, I just feel going out and seeing, you know, all tiers of music, whether it's a major act or someone at the Troubadour or
it's tough out there or gotten tougher.
Or bands at dive bars in the valley.
Well, the venues are so highly invested, and now with the economy and also the kind of industry crashing, people's overhead is intense, and they pay for security and they pay for all the other things. So I know the pressures, and you know they would have to let employees go to make different things happen or whatever. Unless it's a hot joint, I don't know. But every venue that I've been to in the last 3 or 4 years is down, you know.
Right.
Capacity, the bands are playing smaller venues. You know, everyone's had to compensate since this economic recession.
Well, you know, what's funny is we were really in a pretty steady line of communication when the recession was on. And
I think it's still on.
Yeah. And we were actually going out to see a lot of shows together. And we noticed like...
We saw it happen.
Yeah, I mean...
and we competed against it.
Right, right. You and I would put shows on together. And I remember, you know, just being very, very linear to you on a day-to-day basis, trying to, like, put shows on and then go out and research and see bands. I remember, you know, at one point, we were doing a lot of business at the Viper Room. And they would get, you know, the first show I ever did there, you know, you got me in there. And I did the show by myself, but you were the one that got me in there and introduced me to the guy in charge. I remember the first show I put on as a promoter was Shrine Builder, which is the guys from Neurosis and
that's an artistic.
The Melvins, yeah.
Quality
and
band.
That was like the first show in America. And it was like, I sold out the Viper Room twice in one night because they did two shows. Remember that?
And yeah, that was an epic show.
Epic. And then like after that, they would give me all kinds of shit. Because nothing was sold out. And I was like, well, there's 100 people here on a Monday. What do you want from me? That's like a lot of people. They're here the whole night drinking. And you would see, you would go to their shows.
Enough is not enough for most venues. They always, that's part of their bargaining chip. And they want you to.
Well, the place holds 250.
Oh.
Okay. So I mean.
Into particulars.
So that's the cap. So that first show I did, I sold the room out twice, 500 tickets, right? And I remember the rent they gave me that night was so cheap because they didn't know what I was going to do, and I did it. Then after that, they raised my rent. Like the next time, they're like, well, you know, we see what you do. We want more out of you.
There's no rules with these people. I mean,
no.
It's ruthless.
Well, what I'm saying is...
It's all agency stuff, too, as you know.
Yeah, the point being, I remember, like, coming off that and then booking 3 months worth of shows and steady business. Like, I'm talking 100 people on Tuesday nights, paying 10 bucks, 12 bucks, and drinking up a storm. Maybe 150 paid, 200 paid, like, you know, very consistent. And I would get so much slack for those numbers on a weeknight, and I would go back to their shows, and you would see like the room completely empty.
The other thing to remember though is that different personalities are there at different times, and the changing of the guard. You know, if someone has a chip on their shoulder for some little political thing that happened on some other little concert, they remember that, and it's
right.
It never ends.
It's all ego, man. That's all it is.
Absolutely,
it's all ego.
But it's also these rich kids, you know, in that case, it's like all of a sudden a rich kid bought the Viper Room, and successful businessman bought the Viper Room. So he's trying to get something out of that. And it's like with Vice and all the labeling and the marketing of a label, you know, licensing, it becomes like you buy a marquee, you buy a billboard. It might be a business, but you're not afraid to lose money on it because it's cool or what it's culturally.
You're attached to
legit.
It.
Legit.
So I bring all this up because.
So, but my point though, just to finish cap that off, is that it's a zero sum game for the venue, and it also is for the bands because they're competing on this downgraded market.
Right.
So that's kind of my point. It's just very tough.
Yeah, it's very tough. The live
professionals.
Yeah,
find a way.
Yeah, I mean the live show business, whether you're local or you're, you know, A-list, B-list, C-list, D-list, meaning like playing, you know, Viper Room, Troubadour, bigger venues and that up into arenas. It just seems like, you know, from my perspective, we're, you know, here we're talking about the local club/bar scene through SoCal and live music and bands and how they operate and what they have to go through. I bring all this up because...
But as you know, a lot of venues are generous and a lot of venues give breaks and a lot of venues do things, make things possible.
Right.
Some band might literally be playing a garage, but then they're playing the Viper Room.
Sure.
So it's a give and take, and it's you have to be tough. It's not for the meek.
Right. I mean, now that's exactly what I was going into next. I mean, you see... You know, I bring all this up because you see the state of local music and venues, and it seems like it's pretty much the same. Like there's nothing really thriving right now. I don't think. I mean, there's great bands filling
Coachella
clubs
is
up.
Off the hook as far as thriving. I couldn't even imagine going where there's 50 million people going to the show now. What's the number? I mean,
I don't know.
I'm exaggerating, but it's crazy. In general. There's the little venues have thrived, and there's been little monopolies in certain neighborhoods.
Well, you want to know something else, too. I mean, I bring all this up at the Viper Room because, you know, I feel a lot of the people at the venues don't know what to book.
No,
they're relying on other people like you and I to do their work. And I know that's true because we would put these shows together as a collective or me by myself or you, and they were great. They were full. And the one thing was, I remember going back to other shows that they booked, and there'd be like no one there. It'd be like five people there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, I think, as you know as well, filling a calendar is pretty intense.
Yeah. And
I see a lot of huge venues now are only booking five nights a month just because they go for the quality. And
not quantity.
That's a tough one, man, when you got to fill every night. So... In general, also, it's just such a diverse scene. The scene's so scattered that booking a lineup. And yet, there's different motives at Viper Room. They like to turn over an audience. So they want a lineup that's crooked so that different groups are in and
because
out of the door.
Because what they want is they want to book five bands.
Couple drinks.
They want 150 come to see this band and leave, and another 200 come for this next band.
People do it
so not stay
ways.
For the whole show. That's what they want.
But you also, as you know, the practice, you have to build a draw. So you know that you don't want to, if you go for the same group of people, that's not going to fill the room. So sometimes you want a different draw. But there seems to be a process of, you know, how many people can, you know, we feel get in this place regardless.
Sure.
So I don't think the lineups are as tight as they could be. And when, like, talking about stoner rock, as much as they hate the genre, I think genres are appropriate and important. Like, you want to know where a band belongs, and you're having a creative discussion about the music. You know, it has to be derivative for me. I don't have any problem with that, you know, and some people really rebel against that, and it makes it harder to write an article. But in general, I see the family tree. I see the culture behind, you know, a type of sound or a type of look even. But
sure.
So I would expect that almost, you know. I want to be able to tell where you're from.
I mean, it's also important to, you know, you have to label something to sell it. Whether it's a live show.
Welcome to the market.
Yeah. Well, welcome to, the marketplace.
Yeah.
You know, and the marketplace.
What am I buying?
Yeah. I mean, at a record store, you're going to have to facilitate a section and bin cards for that set, for each section. And then when you put on a show, it's going to be metal night, hardcore night, or punk night.
I don't know, dude. We just make noise, okay? It's really loud.
Exactly. Well, as far as movies go,
okay,
I won't get, you know, because of proprietary information, I don't want to blow the whistle.
Oh, yeah, it's deadly out there. It's deadly.
Well, I want to talk about your work on The Dark Knight.
Okay, that movie came out, so that's cool.
Yeah. No, I want to talk about your work on The Dark Knight because...
I was basically a slave. Just kidding.
Were you a slave?
Yeah, like, make things happen. Okay.
I mean, we were talking, in depth about after that movie came out, how much work you did. And I remember you were in downtown, they shot it in New York and downtown.
Well, that's the thing. It's a massive movie and massive things happened all over the globe.
For that
movie?
They
shot in London, they shot in New York, I think Detroit. I'm not even 100% sure because it's just like I get a gig and I get the phone call and they're like, it's happening in our town for a few weeks, maybe a few months, and I'm on. So
you don't ask questions, you just know you're going to get paid.
Yeah, it's a paycheck. And I try to read the trades and people at work are sometimes pretty surprised when I know that something's coming or going or the size of it. But
are there more hipsters than ever and we're trying to get into the movie business as PAs?
As many as there are bands, there's, people with ambitions out there.
You know? Well, I don't want to start and sound like insulting people, but
my biggest pet peeve, I would say, is the behind the scenes video. You know, even George Lucas to YouTube, and I saw some Iron Man 3 stuff recently, and the whole making it cool to be on set or whatever that is kind of a detriment. And I feel like it's important to have a craft and basically hold that position down. You know, there's a lot of people that promote too fast and no one's trained in management skills or communication or, you know, psychology, you know. So it's kind of like a lot of people that get into these intense army style situations, you know, it experience wins. Doesn't matter what your title is. And so, you just try to be diplomatic as possible and not burn any bridges.
And not take things
any
personal.
Other business.
Right.
Every day is the end of the day, you know.
Don't take it home with you, right?
Pretty much. You might take it home. Just don't bring it back to work the next day. Let's say that.
All right.
When I was in the Dominican Republic working on a movie, I was trying to learn a little Spanish. And I was saying, Borda el Pizarro. Like, I don't know if I said that well. But
can you say what movie you're working on? You don't have to.
It was some Amanda Bynes movie. But basically, I was just saying erase the chalkboard. You know, like, all right, guys, we're done. Let's go erase the chalkboard. And every day is a fresh day.
Right. So, I mean, that's like a good analogy to apply to like a hardworking day so you don't like let it keep replaying anything that was negative in your head to bring anyone down, right?
I mean, I hope that people think I'm pretty diplomatic and I like to try and keep the mood positive.
Sure.
And,
I can attest to that.
Relationships with people so that they know that I'm not working against them or, you know, I like to support and be supported and. Doesn't always happen that way, but we do our best.
I think one thing you and I could agree on is how the internet and phones have changed things for music and movies and television. And I think you and I have a lot in common. We lean towards the same kind of ethos when it comes to hard work and doing things yourself and creating your own models. And hopefully, you know, like the George Lucas's, you know, when he did Star Wars. Well,
back on the California culture tip, whatever,
right.
I would say that, you know, it's not like a marathon where you're going to cross a ribbon and all of a sudden you're accepted and successful. And I mean, maybe once you get on the Golden Globes, it feels that way. I don't know. But you have to choose a lifestyle. You have to be a professional. And if you want to be an actor, you decide I'm an actor. And if I can't make it, you know, it's kind of like a life choice.
You sign up for it.
Yeah. You have to be hardcore about it. I don't know.
Well, I think
same for a band,
for music, or you know, being running an independent.
Can't quit.
Or yeah, you gotta if you want to run an independent production company, online radio station independently, you know, you have to really commit to it and sign up.
I tried it for like a year, but it didn't work out.
What?
I'm just saying that parable doesn't work. You can't right. be like, you know, I guess things will come and go, but in general, you have to be a lifer.
Right. I mean, let's talk about when you were coming to my shows at Relax Bar, when we were joining forces and putting shows on as promoters at other rooms. Let's talk about all the bands that aren't around anymore in LA that we used to book and see. I mean, I don't want to talk about them, but I mean, I think that's a testimony to people that aren't lifers.
But it's also a testimony to how hard it is, right?
It is.
And that's why I'm saying that.
And there's no disrespect to them, because it's very difficult to like,
with the economics, you know, it's the flat earth. The computers have made everything cheap, and at the same time, the economy crashed. So it just got smashed.
Sure.
And, you know, with everything expected to be free, I want music for free, and maybe I'll come to the concert.
Now I could watch the concert on my phone. I could watch the TV show on my phone.
I can record it. And there's nothing I hate worse, by the way, than everyone holding their phones up in a concert.
You know what was rad? Yeah, you know what was rad? Last June, I it was great. I went to all three Van Halen shows in SoCal.
Yeah.
Two nights at Staples Center, one night at Honda Center. And you and I and some other friends went to the Cult, and I took my mom to see the Beach Boys at the Hollywood Bowl. All like in a month. Five big shows.
Nice.
The Cult, you and I were there with some friends, and we were off to the side watching them. We were having some beers, having a good time.
It's more important to interact than
And these people, I mean, everyone had their phones up, and Brandon was just like, well, these people just stop and just threw your cup of beer, and it actually tagged someone's hand.
No, I nailed it. It was empty. It was an empty cup, and I was just like.
And I think they dropped their phone.
For maybe 5 minutes, yeah.
but that irks you, right?
Well, yeah. If I can't see what's going on because there's a big square in my face, that's not what I paid for. And I just think it's a little bit lame. You know, enjoy the moment.
Live in the moment.
Go see
right?
them the next year, you know. Not everyone's an archive. We're not all Google. You know, I don't care what's on your hard drive. You know, try to be here now and check the show.
Right. Right. I mean, and going back to, you know, the culture of Los Angeles and the bands and people trying to really create a career for themselves professionally. I mean, going back to that, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's tough. I think it's tougher than ever to sustain attention from the press, to have a release out and sell it and to draw people.
I really think it's contrived out there. I don't know that there's a genuine movement. You know, people might like certain bands, or certain bands might be kind of the heroes of the day, but I don't see the dedication. I mean, it might be like a personal dedication for an agent, say, I really like this band, or, you know, believe in this band. But in general, it's just so contrived out there, you know, with The Voice and all these other Star Search shows. They are just hamming it up big time as far as I'm concerned. And it's, you know, it's never going to get back to the 70s where all these genius songwriters were, you know, coming about. And I know that there was an industry back then that had songwriters working with bands and making it happen for them. But, you know, there was just different eras in which the songwriters made a difference.
Right.
I don't know how to say that. But,
I think, you know,
comes back to genres and quality of music.
But, yeah. I mean, I think what we're getting here is the just the way culture is changing. I don't think
there's a hack level going on right now.
There is. I don't think there's a lot of, see, for me is when I say a band is heavy or a group is heavy, it could be a guy with an acoustic guitar. And when someone is completely sincere about something and you see it cutting through in their art, and it's like, whoa, that's heavy.
Choice that person made. That's what makes the difference.
Sure. And I think right now when you say a hack level, I agree. I just think there's so many, you know, skinny jean bands with the handlebar mustaches, you know, and the sailor hat. You got those guys.
Sailor hats are a happy Tom. You can't mess with
There's, I mean, he's the OG sailor hat. But I'm just saying, man, it's like, you know what? I mean, I'm not a bitter old man. By one bit, I'm always seeking, I'm always working. I just think, like, look, something's wrong out there. There's just no sincerity as far as new music. And I think the problem is...
Try not to generalize, old man, you know? Give it a break. You know, give the kids a chance. There might be a generation
gap. There's a different approach. I think people are looking with their phone at video and saying, okay, this is the band I'm going to start.
But the 70s hated the 80s. The 80s hated the 90s. And I want to say...
But I like everybody.
I want to say that...
I want to like everybody.
There's unique things happening out there, whether it's Skrillex or, you know, no matter what your genre, there's still some front bearers out there, you know, killing it.
Yeah, but, there's leaders.
Yeah. Then it's just damn saturated. And I don't feel like things are current, like modern and progressive. And there are a few bands even playing old instruments that can maintain an edge. And
I'm talking about being sincere. And I'm just going to go.
Even all these sincere acoustic bands, I feel it's kind of like, all right, dude, don't cry me a river, you know? Like, I don't know. Like, I'm just not a Mayer fan or, you know, like, when music's safe, I'm over it. If you're not bringing something that is new and progressive, whether it's a crazy sound or it doesn't even have to be crazy, but it has to be new. Something has to be new.
I mean, you know what? I mean, I'm really immersed in the music business and music itself. I mean, you know, I spend my days at a record label working as a label manager, doing a radio show, playing in two bands, and, you know, getting inspired through music to go out and do photography as well. Via public transportation. And I really try to do my best to go out and see bands and stay inspired and buy music, listen to it. And, you know, I'll go and listen to a lot of new music throughout the day, and it just doesn't do it for me. I just keep going backwards. And right now I'm between Santana and Jimi Hendrix.
Dude, I love Hendrix. And the Valleys of Neptune has been in serious rotation, let me tell you.
Yeah, I mean, as far as, you know, Hendrix goes, I mean, don't you...
Still killing it.
Still killing it, dude. I mean, to me, that's like, I don't want to use progressive because he's not like the band Yes, but I mean, it has...
Right. That was a genre, but what we mean is a more general term.
And more general term, like just his mindset. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, talk about punk rock. I mean, he was just raw when nobody was raw. He was loud. Nobody,
super loud.
We don't have any concept of how loud he was because we weren't there. And I think the next generations will lose that context that nobody played as loud as he did. When he played a TV show or whatever, it was full blast.
Right.
And full on.
But yeah, just full on. Like that's a good way to put it. Like
just melting. I mean, he just breaking it and making it look easy at the same time.
Right.
I mean, Hendrix destroys.
You know, and there's a unique approach too. I think, like, you know, as you watch like the Woodstock footage, I've been watching that a lot the last couple of years, just really like seeing something new every time I watch it. And it's like you just see the way he's playing his instrument.
He never dropped that guitar. I mean, he went home and his home was Electric Ladyland and he recorded. And that supposedly they can come out with a new album every year for 50 years. I mean, the guy just was beyond prolific. And I mean, he deserves credit for surround sound before George Lucas.
Talk about that.
He wanted to do concerts and surround sound. He's like, all right, left, right, I get it. What about the whole thing?
So he had that concept. He visualized that concept.
He was working on concerts and surround sound in 69.
Before it was even hardware.
Yeah. Inventing the hardware, making his own, you know, stuff. And he was a mad scientist. I mean, I'm no aficionado guitar player. You would know more about plugs and how to mix it up. And we had some cool conversations with Jack and Dino about getting in the sound and how sound works. And I just think, in general, Hendrix was on. And he could be alone, and he's just making it happen, you know.
I don't know.
I mean, it's kind of like the separation and the intensity and
the sincerity also.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he was a role model. He was a genuine, I wouldn't say maybe because of the drug use, that would be a controversial comment, but in general, he was practically a monk as far as every footage I've seen, you know, always pleasant and solid dude.
Right. Now, what's the first concert you went to?
First concert I went to was the Police in the Santa Barbara Bowl.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Was that the Synchronicity tour?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was late 70s, so probably before Synchronicity.
Oh, okay, Ghost in the Machine?
Some stuff like that. I can't really remember, but also, like, my dad did some influencing. He got me into Oingo Boingo and the Talking Heads.
Oh, cool.
And I was automatically a Devo fan. You know, I saw that on TV and I was like, what?
You're like, I'm in.
Yeah, I mean, you got my attention. But, you know, that was the product of the time. You know, arcade games were new. Star Wars was new. Music was going 2001 style. And things were happening. It was, you know, in times of peace after the Vietnam War or whatever, we were kind of the suburban kids that had it all.
Sure. But, you know, for you getting into the movie business and working on films like Hangover 1 and 2 and, you know, The Dark Knight Rises and What Just Happened, you know, would you say your biggest influence was seeing Star Wars and, like, you made that commitment? I know we talked about that before.
I saw that movie when I was 6 years old or 7 years old. And, you know, it's weird the awareness that I had because of that movie. And I would just say I remember, you know, that experience. And I was automatically a science fiction fan. I loved 2001. My parents wouldn't let me see it, but I still saw it. And the horror movies and stuff at that in the 70s are classic as well. But in general, you know, that's my perspective. Obviously, I can only talk about what I experienced, and it was pretty significant.
Well, I mean, as far as the model that that whole team created, ILM, Industrial Light Magic, Light and Magic.
Oh, man, they are in such drama now with Disney. I mean, people are totally losing
their mind. So you mean like the Last of the Mohicans?
I talk about a killer industry and a killer city. I mean, if you could make a living in San Francisco, given, you know, doing anything, I would consider it. And in general, I'm kind of feeling for those guys because I know the pain in the business is that things are shrinking. Things are sailing abroad and going to other states or other countries. So
they do it cheaper.
They lost it, you know. And so I was kind of hoping that Disney might bring that stuff back to L.A., but it sure looks like London. And Warner Brothers bought Leavesden Studios in London. So now where they shot Harry Potter and the original Star Wars is now Warner Brothers. So that's a big deal where they can choose whether to shoot in England or shoot here.
Oh, so as far as your fantasy of working on a Star Wars movie? You think that's going to happen?
Oh, you know, my decorator is hot for it, so we'll see what happens.
So we're going to take a break.
Okay.
You brought your iPod.
Oh, sure.
You have your phone. Actually, we're going to play some tracks that Jeremy has for us set up, and we'll get you all set up when we come back for the second break.
No problem.
All right. Cool. Take it away.
This is Ignacio Salcido from La Mezcla The Bakery in Boyle Heights. You're listening to LA Nista and SkidRowStudios.com. Yeah.
This episode of Los Angeles Nista is brought to you by La Mezcla Bakery, a family-owned business serving the community since 1952. Tamales and sweetbread, made the old-fashioned way daily.
Yeah.
hey, Brendan decided to stop the song he was playing just because he felt like it.
Well, it was ending.
It was ending. That was a Viking move.
No worries.
Yeah, I like that. That's an inside joke.
The song had actually ended and it was just some clapping. So yeah. I hope you didn't miss out.
Well, you know what? You are very well read and informed. And that's why I just love having a conversation with you, because I always learn something and I always retain new information and try to pass that along to people in conversation. Bro. I mean, you know, what are your ideals with, you know, satellites and space and just how controlled it is up there now?
Well, if you can catch two marauders in 3 days, then guess what? You live in a police state. I mean, I'm really glad they caught those guys. And, you know, every week it's somebody, right? We got to find. And,
sure.
In general, without getting too touchy on politics or what's going on, I mean, there are just layers of, you know, whether it's our internet or our phones, and everything is on, you know, and there's cameras on every corner.
Right. So I mean, the eye in the sky.
The brave new world has come even faster and constantly faster. It's Moore's Law. Everything right. doubles.
So. At the break, we were talking about your ideals about, you know, us as a country going out into space and finding another planet, you know.
Oh, I was just, I'd like to keep up on physics. And to me, science is part of what's cutting edge out there. And I want to take part in what's happening now. I want to know what's going on. And
you think we're on our way to be Star Trek pretty soon?
I think it takes longer than, I don't know. Some things are happening fast. If you're rich, I guess you can go on a little private jet now. But did you think you would see that in your lifetime?
No.
You're like, hey, I've got a couple million bucks. Let's go for a ride. I mean,
it's very true. I mean, there's a reality show. That's apparently there's a reality show
going to Mars.
Yeah, you heard about that?
Oh, that's awesome. It's insane. One-way ticket, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's just like mind-boggling.
Going for it.
So yeah, you're going. You're committing. I mean, think about it. So I don't know what it's called, but it's
kind of disgusting that it's a reality show.
Yeah, I mean the voyeurism factor with
the
society, you know, society and everything. It's just.
Do you need to know everything?
I mean, but here's the deal.
There are some things I don't
trying to put people on Mars as a production for a TV show, one-way ticket, and they're never coming back.
It's intense. I think there's ways to fund things without it being a circus. And I was a little disappointed when I heard about that.
Do you know what the show's called?
Oh, no.
Or what production
company? I think they're still formulating.
But the word's out that this is in the works.
They started the publicity, obviously. You know, there's certain websites that like to hawk the news, and sometimes things bleed over from publicity into news. So I think that's one of those stories.
Right. Well, as far as the whole idea, the plot, to me, is kind of disturbing. I mean,
I think it's brilliant that if someone wanted to retire and knew they were in, you know, healthy, but, you know, maybe wanted to go stage left and they wanted to go up there. And I think they are looking for couples and stuff. But if you lost all your family or, you know, whatever your motivations, the movie Moon was brilliant about a guy that was cloned and he's all alone on the moon working by himself. I mean,
back up. So
that's called Moon.
Right.
I forget the actor's name. I could IMDb it. It was directed by David Bowie's son, actually, and who had changed his name and was kind of keeping it undercover. You know, built a space capsule in his backyard and made his own movie. And there's some kind of loosey-goosey special effects, but in general, a solid concept. And now he's doing $300 million movies, you know. I'm sure, you know, there are different advantages to being a rock star son, but it was a good, solid concept.
Sure. Now, what's his name? You know it?
Oh, no.
I had no idea Bowie had a son. I had no idea Bowie's son's making movies.
Yeah. It's going to be fairly classic, I think, as far as not being too CG. I'm kind of interested to see Oblivion on a concept level, but I'm more of a hard science fiction. I like Stanley Kubrick. He's the man.
Sure.
You know, and like you say, Hendrix, Stanley Kubrick was the Hendrix of movies, and he still hasn't been touched. I think Fincher is close number two, but... And that's just my opinion.
Right. You and I always have a lot of commonalities in sharing enthusiasm for Los Angeles and everything it has to offer, from East LA to the water, you know, and skate parks and the music that comes out of here and the art and the culture and the creativity from people from this neck of the woods, this region.
I would say there's a new form of juice out there coming from these super internet moguls. The whole Northern Cal scene has really invaded Venice, and all these
Google's here now.
Yeah, all these heavyweights, you know, whether it's EA Games or whatever, I mean, they blow away studios. The gaming industry is way huger than the film industry.
Is it?
Oh, yeah. And there are big stakes situations. The games cost just as much, if not more, right, than a movie.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I was reading articles online 2 years ago that guys like Spielberg was going to the Middle East to get funding. Is that
well,
true?
Things dried up with the banking situation. I mean, we had the huge crash, and the movie What Just Happened was primarily about funding Fight Club, and basically... You know,
that's the Robert De Niro movie.
Yeah. Barry Levinson was a director and total genius guy who works on a budget. And I think that, you know, basically the movie was that these guys, again, being ambitious and not stoppable, you know, went to the money. And the money happened to be, you know, Saudi Arabia or whatever. And even Michael Jackson, you know, kind of retired in the Middle East, and there's just sick money out there, so they're going to go get it. I don't know. And being international, I'm sure you make friends and business opportunities arise, and, you know, that's just another level, basically.
Yeah.
Smaller, tighter community, I'm sure.
As far as the future of L.A. and Hollywood, I've seen... After discussing with you, I've seen these mock-ups of double-story cities. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, there's...
Do you think it's going to happen? Two-story cities, like a double layers?
What I think is interesting is time scale. And what we know about the Earth is how old it is. And in general, things are really old. So if we assume that it's taken us millions of years to evolve into what we are, little skateboarders or whatever, we're going to be around, and the Earth is going to be around. The sun is not going to blow up anytime soon. You know, I'm not an apocalypse person, though I think it's interesting as a movie. Things are pretty solid. Until the meteorite comes and hits us, things are going to be pretty much the same. I mean, I don't think... things have changed too much in some regards. We still wear Levi's.
Right.
You know, we still wear Vans.
Vans and
Levi's. I was going there too, bro.
Yeah. I mean, things are pretty straightforward.
Yeah, and there's, I don't know, some directors are taking the analog route, and I that's for the better. As much as they can make things for real, for the actors, not CG. And I think it just always is more believable. But as far as double stack cities, there's architects that are just going for it. I mean,
so you know what I'm talking about, huh?
Oh yeah. I mean, it you know, the architects are ahead of the movies. I think sometimes movies influence technology and influence design, perhaps, but when it comes down to the bosses, the guys that really design stuff that exists,
that's another proven, level. Yeah.
Architects. Not everyone in the film business is an architect. Not everyone draws. You know, a lot of people just kind of hire out. And so I have a lot of respect for people in the furniture business and architecture and engineering fields and science. I mean, that stuff's for real. And I'm glad that movies can maybe have a positive influence. And I love the culture, as you know. But as far as respect goes, that's another level.
Yeah, we had a conversation last year, and there was like this timeline where they wanted to, you know, and there was this whole plan attached to that timeline where there's the possibility of they want to build like another.
Well, Schwarzenegger was huge on the plan, foreseeing
the one I'm talking about?
Economic. Well, I think you're headed there. The economic crash was headed towards us. Bush strung it along as long as he could and gave us checks and kept floating the economy. I think everyone saw the train wreck coming. And one of Schwarzenegger's plans was to make all the freeways in L.A. double-deckers. Mm-hmm. And it's in architectural philosophy about the different levels and how society and the wealthy will kind of occupy the higher levels. And then you always still have the alleys and the streets and the underneath. And it's interesting being here downtown as much
the
as...
the underground.
Yeah, I mean, I still see it. You know, there's definitely... it's almost like a caste system, or, you know, there's different levels to humanity that's, you know, unavoidable.
That exists, yeah.
Especially in downtown L.A.
Right. I mean, I was somewhat let down to hear about this bullet train to San Francisco.
Oh, man, if this happens, it'll be, you know, a miracle. I think we should have had it 10 years ago, obviously. I think it's weird how it went inland. I think the coast is fine. It's the only part I care about.
Why do you think it's important to go with a credit union versus a bank?
Decentralize it all. Take away the power. That's your money. And unfortunately, the credit unions will sell your loan, and you lose control anyway. But in general, at least your interest and your stuff is going towards your stuff. And everything's fake out there, man. I'm thinking about Bitcoin. Have you been checking that out?
No, what did you tell me about that?
Bitcoin's intense. It's, you know, they say it's a commodity, and the dollar is backed by gold, but gold is not backed. So it's a commodity. It can fall or it can go up. It's not based on anything. Bitcoin is not real. You're never going to get a coin in the mail or anything like that. And people are going for it. And what happened recently was with the financial crises in Europe and Portugal and whatnot, all of a sudden millions of people went on to Bitcoin and the stock went through the roof, right? Because everyone's buying Bitcoin. But then it always corrects. And I just feel like the layman has to be careful, you know, jumping on board. You're going to lose your money. But it's interesting. And it's, you know, they've basically found a way that no government can stop what they're doing. They're offshore. It's internet money. And it's everywhere. So currencies, beware. I mean, it's interesting.
So it's like an air sandwich.
It's like an MP3
of money.
Destroying a vinyl. I mean, it's virtual money. It's not, you know, representing anything that you can... I don't know how to describe it. It's just the internet squashing another industry, you know? They're taking it all. No more fees. No more, you know, banks are being attacked by Bitcoin.
So this has nothing to do with the actual banks and the old school families.
It's just some dude.
The Rockefellers.
It's some mystery dude, some billionaire dude. And he took his name off the website, hired a programmer, and the programmer's name got put on the website. And the guy who created it doesn't exist. He's
off the grid.
He's like anonymous. And so, you know, he could get screwed by the IRS or whatever. I'm sure they're trying to figure out what to do. Because basically, if everyone was banking in the Cayman Islands, there's nothing to tax. There's no taxes in Bitcoin. So if everyone goes Bitcoin, almost every government could. I mean, that's an extreme. You know, the governments wouldn't be able to finance anymore. So it's a direct attack. All these libertarians are going head over heels for it because they think everything's voluntary.
So it's not, I mean, so it's not backed by the dollar?
No. Nothing. It's off the grid. It's like money off the grid. So all rules don't apply.
So it's like under the table, virtual.
It's the flat earth happening. You know, and it's like what happened to the music industry, what's happening to film, what's happening to manufacturing, what's happening to energy. Everything's going into a model that is just the slightest margin of profit. You know, it's just like you have to be a billionaire to squeeze profit out of this. And it must be interesting on some levels, you know, the extreme economics, or just billionaires becoming billionaires over and over again. But for us middle class and for everyone else, our margins have all been tightened up, you know? And
sure. There's no wiggle room.
Back to the music industry, I think that's exactly what happened. And in film, it's, you know, they want us to work for $10 an hour. They want, you know, that's what they would like. So I'm sorry.
I mean, you're a union guy.
Yeah, and I believe in the union. It's hard for me to get involved with the politics of it or what they're doing. I'm pretty critical about the whole situation. But people need to fight for what they want to keep. And right now, the digital industry is crashing because they never unionized. And now every kid in a garage working from home can do special effects. So there's no more digital domain. They went bankrupt and they've refinanced and reemerged. But all the employees are scratching from what I've heard. And it's just gotten tighter, let's say. And
so it's the same thing like the recording studios for music. It's like people have their home studio now.
Lots of friends in the recording industry have had tough times since the economy. And
it's
the budgets and everything has come down to earth. Music videos, no need for a budget. There's a kid on a skateboard that'll make it happen. Everything is like that. I'll do it for free, man. Give me the next one. Yeah, that's the epitome of the film industry, and especially in commercials. You know, equipment for free.
So it's devalued.
And, you know, like back to the venues, same thing. I don't know what it is about this economy. If manufacturing or design, I'm sure, is feeling the pinch. You know, I'm just glad I'm not working in a cubicle. I never wanted to do that one, but so far, so good.
Said you're blowing stuff up.
We've been blowing some stuff up.
Right. Well, Brendan, that's going to wrap it up.
Right on, man.
Thank you so much. I can't thank you. Enough for coming in. I'll drive it all all that way. I'm not going to say where you came in because that's your private information, but you drove a far way to be here tonight, and much appreciated.
No biggie, man. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. Hi, this is Eddie Solis. You're listening to Los Angeles Nista on SkidRowStudios.com. This episode of Los Angeles Nista is brought to you by La Mascota Bakery, a family-owned business serving the community since 1952. Tamales and sweetbread, made the old-fashioned way daily.